They missed a rhyme with Hyundai. I was driving my Hyundai, I think. That's the Bangles. By the way, it's an interesting bumper sidelight. Of course, that song was written by Prince. And did you hear this week that he's getting a hip replaced?
Oh, no.
That just, boy, as if there aren't enough things conspiring to make me feel old, just as I'm about to turn another year older on Monday. I'm going to add hip replacement for Prince. If I start seeing Donny Osmond doing, you know, like denture commercials or something like that, I don't know what I'm going to do. I just may give up early. We've got a great show ahead. I'm really looking forward to this topic. I've been fascinated by this for a couple of weeks. And maybe this doesn't come as a surprise to everybody here, but this one does for me. I don't think you have to agree or disagree with the politics of this discussion to find this conspiracy shocking. Or maybe you need to go click on and get a better look at it at the trailer we've put for the movie Expelled. It's coming up in April. Ben Stein, you know him from TV and movies, right? Bueller. Ben Stein is the host of this documentary. We've got the producer, Mark Mathis, here next. If you click on to coasttocoastam.com, you can see kind of an extended trailer of this film. You get a better idea of what we're talking about next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Mark Mathis is the producer of Expelled, which will hit theater screens. It's April, isn't it, Mark? Isn't that what you told me the other day?
April 18th.
Okay. And what's your background before you did Expelled? Tell us a little bit about, brag on yourself a little bit before you did this movie.
My career started in television news. I was a news reporter and anchor in television stations from one side of the country to another. I stopped doing that and opened up my own media relations company, which I've run for 14 years now. And I've developed a career as a media trainer, media consultant. I wrote a book called Feeding the Media Beast it was published about 5 years ago and has been published in India and China and Russia and here in the United States. It's in its fourth printing. And I've done a lot of things, done some talk radio, done some work in the energy sector, and now I'm doing this documentary film.
Now, is that because, as some of critics I've been reading about this movie a little bit online, is that because you're a religious zealot?
Anybody who disagrees with atheistic neo-Darwinism is a religious zealot.
But I mean, is this all motivated? Let's just address this question right up front. Is this all motivated from a kind of evangelism that you're just trying to spread a Christian message through a documentary, and you're kind of covering it with Ben Stein as the host?
Well, that's certainly what they would like you to believe. Ben Stein, who, by the way, is kind of a secular Jewish person,
right?
It's one of the big propaganda tools that they use. This is just an effort to get creationism taught in the schools, which is really pretty funny. It's one of the most lame explanations that they have, because if you've talked to anybody who is religious, and it doesn't matter what religion, or even people who are non-religious, or even atheistic, nobody wants religion taught in the schools in a science class. Nobody. The most religious people don't want that because there's no confidence that the science teacher is going to be able to teach the particular flavor of religion that they believe in. All people really want is honest science being taught to their children or their young adults in universities. They don't want what's currently happening, which is an atheistic view of how life began and developed, taught de facto as if it is fact, without teaching the weaknesses of the theory or without teaching the other side of the debate, the other possibility, which is that there is design in the universe.
Talk about the difference between intelligent design and creationism.
Well, intelligent design is a minimal scientific commitment to the idea that when we look at nature, we can see patterns and that those patterns are best explained through intelligence and not randomness.
Okay, so intelligence, you're being a kind of divine hand of some unspecified nature.
That's correct. That there is something else at work here, that these things could not have happened through a random process, that there has to be some sort of intelligence involved, and it stops right there. If you okay. go further and you talk about creationism, that's where you have folks who look at a literal biblical interpretation and then examine science and then take those two together.
But you're not making an argument for creationism in this movie Expelled.
No, we're making a very strong argument that there are two possibilities of what we see here in the world and why it is that we're here. The biggest question ever asked, how did we get here? Is there a purpose or reason? This is a secondary question for why we're here. But just scientifically, how is it that we came to be here? How does life come to be on planet Earth? And there are two possibilities. There is either strict materialism, which is a random process that was described by Charles Darwin, what is now known as neo-Darwinism, or there is design in the universe. There is something outside of what we see. There is more than just the material world. These are the two possibilities. What we have is a single theory that is taught and a systematic exclusion of the other side for no good scientific reason.
Well, I want to get into the exclusion part here coming up, because I think that's the most compelling part of this for me in seeing your extended trailer and what I'm really looking forward to when I see the whole movie. We'll talk about that in a minute, but let me pick that a little bit of what you just said, because I thought it was my impression, and I did a little reading about Darwin, that it wasn't – Darwin was no atheist and, in fact, died very much a believer, wasn't he?
You know, that's an issue that is certainly up for some debate. There's a lot more information out there that suggests that, in fact, Darwin was struggled greatly with trying to figure out his place in the world and if there was anything beyond the material world.
But he never denounced religion. He never renounced church. He never said, "Don't go," or "This stands in opposition to," or anything. He just merely questioned in his era what had been sort of the prevailing creationism of his day. He was the first one to sort of challenge creationism and say, hey, maybe it didn't happen like the Bible said, but rather, well, I guess he wasn't the first, but he was amongst the first who did this. But he himself never said you can't be a religious person and then also believe Darwinism, or at least believe in the theory of evolution.
Well, he was certainly a sentinel voice in this debate, but really what Charles Darwin thought at this point in time has become pretty irrelevant.
Okay.
Charles Darwin, when he looked at the cell, he thought that the cell just contained, you know, some simple protoplasms, maybe some proteins and some amino acids, and that was about it. He didn't understand that when you look inside the cell, which we are now able to do with our technology, that what you see is a vast amount of mind-boggling information, creation and transcription and compaction and unraveling, and little tiny machines that perform all sorts of functions within the cell. But this is a whole world that Darwin could not have imagined. And it would have been very interesting to see what Darwin's face would have looked like if he could have, and in his day, looked inside the cell and see what we can see today.
Well, fair enough. I'm just always curious what would happen if historical figures were transported today. What would they do and how would they act? And I don't know, I always get a feeling from Darwin that he wasn't the person that his intellectual descendants have made him out to be. But we'll put that aside for the moment and get back to the part that's really crucial for this discussion, and that is on college campuses and in universities. You cannot, I'll leave it up to you. Can you espouse a belief that there is a God within a scientific context? Can you talk about even the possibility of a divine hand without fear of retribution?
No. I was about to say, well, you can, but then you're done. You're out. You're expelled. Your Or at the very least, if you are a professor who has tenure, you can perhaps remain, but you've now set yourself up as a pariah within the scientific establishment, somebody that nobody else wants to associate with, in a work environment that is turned hostile and difficult. This is what happens to people. You cannot challenge this atheistic notion of the only material mechanisms of being responsible for what we see in life. If you do, you're done.
You're shunned, perhaps, at the very least.
Shunned would be the least of it.
Okay. And the worst of it is what you've been able to find as you've been doing this documentary with Ben Stein are college professors, people who are well established in their particular field of expertise, who have found themselves losing their jobs.
Absolutely.
Okay. Give us some examples of that.
Well, I'll give probably the most current example that should be looked at, which is Guillermo Gonzalez. This is an astronomer at Iowa State University who is one of the finest astronomers alive in the world today. He wrote a book called The Privileged Planet, which points toward the idea that there must be design in nature when you look at the way that the cosmos is formed and the Earth and its solar system and planets. And not only that, but this really insightful item that the Earth, because of its placement in the universe, is uniquely positioned to observe the universe. This is a very compelling, interesting, phenomenal book. It was later turned into a DVD. This represents a very small percentage of his work, maybe 2 or 3%. And he did this work on his own time. While he's doing work at Iowa State, he's getting paper after paper published, peer-reviewed papers. He has 68 to his name, all highly cited by other scientists. Well, he's an associate professor, so he comes up for tenure at Iowa State. For reference, other professors who come up for tenure at Iowa State have an average of about 15 peer-reviewed papers, and they get tenure about 93% of the time. Guillermo Gonzalez, this world-renowned astronomer, comes up for tenure review, and he is denied, and he has 68 peer-reviewed papers. Some of the top officials at Iowa State came out and just said, we didn't want intelligent design associated with ISU, and therefore, we denied this guy tenure. We were successful. Guillermo Gonzalez appealed his denial at to every level that he could. We had the smoking gun with emails that revealed that this is the reason why he was denied tenure, and yet at Iowa State, at the board review, they would not allow these emails to be heard as evidence. So he has been denied tenure. Come May, he will be unemployed because that's when his teaching contract expires. And it will be extraordinarily unlikely that this astronomer whose work has led to the discovery of planets, will even be able to get a job at a university as an astronomer, because of his intelligent design views.
Why can't he get a job, say, at a religious university?
He probably won't be able to get a job at most of those as well.
Why?
A handful, but they're not top flight. Because this is how hostile the situation is. I will give you another example.
Wait. Even at a religious university, they would be hostile to somebody who has a one or two, like a paragraph in a book about how, gosh, it all fits together so well, it's almost like there's a God or something. And even at a religious university, they won't hire a guy like that? I find that hard to believe.
Well, let's talk about what has happened at Baylor University, a Christian university in Waco, Texas. We've got a distinguished professor, tenured distinguished professor, Robert Marks, who deals in high-level mathematics, the kind of stuff that only a handful of people around the planet even understand.
Right.
Okay? So the head of his department didn't understand Professor Marks' work, but once it was brought to his attention that Professor Marks' work is associated and reveals a sympathy toward intelligent design, he immediately told Professor Marks to shut down his website that had this information on it.
What was the information about? I mean, it was math that had to do with proving there was a God?
It had math that basically led you to the conclusion that there's design in the universe.
Okay.
So he's told to immediately shut this thing down, which he didn't. So the university removed it from their servers. It's not returned back to the servers there at Baylor University. The university never gave a coherent explanation as to why this was removed. They said it was because he didn't follow proper procedures. But the amazing thing is they never produced any proper procedures to be followed. To this day, they haven't released any procedures. And Professor Marks has never in his entire 30 years in academia ever followed any procedures. He has other websites that don't deal in this information. He didn't follow any procedures for, and those websites are still on Baylor servers. It's obvious. Baylor has to protect itself as a top-flight research institution by denying intelligent design.
But wait, they have a religious department, don't they? Don't they? I mean, I would think they would offer a discipline in religious studies or something.
But this is one of the things that is used by Darwinists to minimize intelligent design theory, which is a scientific theory.
Okay, but hold on a second. I mean, put it right there. I mean, let me just put that back. Why couldn't they move that page? Just say, okay, look, you know, this is interesting, but it points to the existence of a God. So we're going to put this page over in our religion department.
Let me ask you this question, Ian. Why is it that only one side of this issue is treated with a religious ruler? Each side of this debate has an implication, okay? So if there is design in the universe, then the implication is that there is a designer. So therefore, it has a religious implication. Well, if there is not a designer in the universe, then there is also a religious implication in that there is no God. Neither side escapes this philosophical baggage. But what happens is that the side that points toward there being a God is systematically excluded or shunted over into the religion department, and the other side is not. Both sides have these implications, and why can't we just look at the science of it? And let's look at the science of intelligent design theory. If the science demonstrates that it is a intriguing, valid theory, it should remain in the science department.
Well, and at very least, even if it's a theory and it's just discussed as a possible theory, where one is not forced to come to the conclusion of the professor, where if you as a student don't experience any discrimination, if you don't agree with that theory, I mean, in its practice, it sort of seems like at a university where all ideas are equal or all things can be discussed. Well, I'm just saying they would think in theory they would be able to do that. Why don't we come back to this? I want to find out more about who's making these decisions. I want to find out about the conspirators, as it were, the people that are colluding. What do we know about them? How many of them go on record, as you talk about, to kick people out of that? And I'm going to ask you what sounds like a wacky question, is what would happen if these same professors implied that the designer of this intelligent layout of our universe and our world were extraterrestrial as opposed to, say, divine. Now, I know that I may just ask you to see is it just the God piece, or is the fact that there's any intelligence at all in the universe at stake? That's where we'll pick up with Mark Mathis next. The new movie is called Expelled. It opens up in April. We'll be talking more about it next and get your calls coming up on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, we're talking with Mark Mathis, who's the producer of Expelled. It's a documentary that'll be shown in theaters coming up in April. Features Ben Stein as the host of this documentary. You can see an extended trailer of this, or like a mini doc of this upcoming movie if you link up to Mark Mathis through coasttocoastam.com. And I want to pick up where we were in this conversation. We talked a little bit about the conspiracy that exists against university professors and researchers who even question the theory of evolution, of neo-Darwinism. And I want to ask Mark Mathis exactly who is behind this, because there's a couple of stories in this mini doc about people who were connected to the Smithsonian Institution and then just ran like one article that said, hey, what if there was intelligent design, only to find themselves out of a gig and kind of kicked out of the scientific community? Well, who's doing the kicking? Do we know who's behind all this? Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Mark Mathis, the producer of Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, hosted by Ben Stein. By the way, how did Ben Stein get involved in this project, Mark? Meant to ask you.
The executive producers of the film approached Ben and said, here, we want you to take a look at something that is going on in science, and do you want to be involved? You want to be a guy who goes out and interviews some of these scientists and really tries to get to the bottom of what's happening in the scientific academy? And Ben Stein just locked on right away. He locked on mostly because of his great belief in the importance of having freedom.
Yeah,
freedom everywhere.
That idea of intellectual honesty, that's what I get from Ben Stein. That's what bugs him more than anything, is that there seems to be all this sort of academic duplicity. And he's written about that in a couple of different articles I've read over the years.
Yeah, he's such a big believer in freedom, and that if people are simply free to discuss ideas, to advance ideas, to be competitive in the marketplace with ideas, that we're going to get the best that the world has to offer. But when ideas are restricted, that's when societies go into decline. And you look across the world today, or in fact throughout all of history, and what you see is evidence of the freest societies being the most productive, the most healthy, the best societies that are out there. And the societies that have their freedoms restricted, this is where you see some of the most horrific things happening.
It is it's a quote from a French critic named Leon Blum that I actually sort of posted over my desk, and I use it all the time. And the line is, it is a free man who is allowed to go to the end of his thought. And I find that such a compelling concept, and it's one of the reasons why I love doing the show on Coast to Coast, because we explore all sorts of things that in the end I may not believe in, but I love exploring. I love seeing, like,
ask the question.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the cool thing about both this show and about what you're talking about and what Ben Stein's doing here is like just trying to figure out like exactly what's happening, who's behind it, and are people willing to come on the record even? And that's kind of where I want to pick up again. Like, there was that guy who was in the Smithsonian or was publishing a newsletter that was connected to the Smithsonian.
No, it was actually much bigger. It was bigger than that. It was a scientific publication.
Okay.
So if a paper gets appears in that publication, it becomes a peer-reviewed paper. Well, in science, it's a very big deal. To be peer-reviewed. And what you have is a systematic exclusion of intelligent design theory through the academic peer review process. You present a paper, and the establishment won't review it, won't publish it, and then this enables them to make the claim that, well, you know, intelligent design is not science because there are no peer-reviewed papers, which, by the way, is not true. There's about 7 to 10 bona fide peer-reviewed papers out there. But this double PhD biologist, Richard von Sternberg, allows a paper by Stephen Meyer to be published in his journal that he's editor of, and when that happened, oh, man, I mean, the wheels came off. The scientific establishment just went crazy. There were all these emails back and forth. This guy's office space was restricted. His access to the
space. Wait, stop right there. That's part of what I'm getting at. Who restricted his office space?
Well, he was working for the National Institutes of Health at the Smithsonian. So his superiors at the Smithsonian restricted his office space And then, I mean, everything about what he was doing turned very cool. Everybody turned a cold shoulder to him. Then he was restricted in doing his work with the specimens. They did everything they could to show this guy that he was no longer wanted at the Smithsonian, and they made it extraordinarily difficult for him to actually get any work done.
Do they go on the record? I mean, is it the head of the Smithsonian that says, hey, I'm sorry, you've just, you published that article, and we hate that. We don't want that in this, and you're no longer considered a scientist because you were willing to publish that article. Do they go on the record and say that?
They try not to go on the record. What you find is a lot of this stuff gets revealed in email traffic, and they've learned through the years actually to be more careful about that. But in the case of Richard Sternberg, the level of persecution of this man was at such a high degree that there was actually a congressional investigation into his bad treatment. So the congressional investigation revealed all of the stuff that I'm talking about, this extraordinarily hostile work environment, the restriction of what he was able to do, and ultimately pushing him out of the Smithsonian. The congressional report is just scathing in its review of the Smithsonian Institution and some other institutions that participated in the blackballing of this scientist, including some direction that came from the National Center for Science Education.
So, and I think that's fascinating. So let me stay with that for a second. So you say they have gotten used to, or they have, you know, the word has gotten around, don't go on the record, don't say anything. Who do you suspect is part of the they, this cobble of academics or of researchers? Who at the very top is sending the message down that says, okay, everybody on three, let's shun the Smithsonian guy?
Well, I wouldn't even go so far as to use a word like conspiracy.
Okay.
Instead, what I would do is I would explain that what you have, especially in this area of biology, is a elitist system where you have roughly 90%, probably a little more, of the people who participate in the system, and these are the biologists themselves, the administrators, everybody who's part of the club. They're all atheists. They've systematically, through an exclusionary process, through colleges, they have made it well known that if you're a student and you want to get into this field, if you don't believe in an atheistic Darwinian approach to life, you don't have any future in this field. Because you're an idiot.
All right, now I'm getting closer. So this is a kind of, if you'll pardon, a sort of a kind of natural selection.
Absolutely.
that's going on where they are handpicking the graduate students that are going for PhDs in particular fields, and there's kind of a blackballing that goes on if that graduate student, say, is getting a degree in biology and they're studying genetics, but they aren't an atheist. The word gets out, don't hire that guy, is what you're saying.
That's correct.
Therefore, that's how they're controlling the intellectual property of these science departments.
That's one method. And then another method is if somebody actually makes it into a scientific field that deals in this area, such as biology or astronomy or paleontology, they actually get in, and then it becomes revealed that these people are don't buy into atheistic neo-Darwinism, and that they think that there could be something else in the universe besides what we see, then they are systematically expelled the way Guillermo Gonzalez, the way Richard Sternberg, the way, you know, other professors have been expelled from the Scientific Academy. So what you have is a culture. Nobody has to say anything about, oh, this, you know, this viper that has, you know, infiltrated our field. Oh, my goodness, this guy believes that there could be design in the universe. They all believe that anyway. So when anybody like Guillermo Gonzalez pops up, the troops come together immediately. Nobody has to blow a whistle.
I see.
And this would happen within the university. And then if it's a big threat like Richard Sternberg was, then the National Center for Science Education gets involved because they're the PR arm of neo-Darwinism.
Okay, big science.
Big science, exactly. You have a couple of others, you know, the NAS, the National Academy of Sciences, the AAAS, the big scientific establishments, that nobody runs those organizations or is part of those organizations who's not an atheist. You can't get in if you're not.
I want to go back to the intelligent design thing you mentioned a few minutes ago. Again, we're talking with Mark Mathis, who's the producer of a new movie called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, opens up in theaters in April. That you said that one of the ways in which intelligent design is relegated into the field of non-science is through the prevention of anything about it being discussed in peer-reviewed articles. Did I sum that up all right?
That's pretty close, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, that's an intriguing idea, but I would think, like, every time you talk about this, you'll get emails from people who say, well, intelligent design is not science. It's a theory that is tinged with religion. It has no business ever being discussed in a science department. What do you say to that?
Well, one of the other big pieces of propaganda that they use. They say that science only deals with things that we can see in the material world. And when you start talking about intelligent design, now you're talking about something that that points toward the implication of something outside of the material world. Therefore, we've completely disqualified you from the debate before the debate's even started. But when you look at evolutionary theory, what you find is that the theory has some enormous gaps, big, big problems that they haven't solved and who may never solve. And so that this is a theory that has got some really serious challenges, but we can't entertain the idea that the other possible theory is in play simply because it entails something that's outside of the material world, therefore it's not science. It's a bogus argument. It's a tool for simply excluding the other possibilities that they own science with their atheistic proposition. But the interesting thing is that with intelligent design theory, you actually can use tools such as mathematics and probability and scientific concepts such as irreducible complexity to demonstrate that that we could have not gotten here through a step-by-step evolutionary process. So you can maybe not disprove, but do very serious damage to the other only possible hypothesis.
I'm a fairly devout religious person, but the idea of evolution or no evolution or microevolution or macroevolution in the end doesn't really mean anything to me. I don't really care. I know that sounds crazy and a lot of people think that that's blasphemy, but I really don't care. But I find this whole thing about people prevented from even having the discussion, that totally rings with me. Because, I mean, in getting my Master's of Divinity, we talked about evolution all the time. I mean, there was a lot of scientific discussions going on in a religious context every time we sat down. Even in the discussion of miracles and, the Ten Commandments, I mean, there are all sorts of things that were suddenly was intersecting the world of science. And that was never a problem on a university campus. So it just seems weird to me that the other can't take place, where scientists can't banty about the concepts of religion in at least an agnostic way. I mean, even if they're not saying, oh, yeah, for sure, but even it would seem like agnosticism would be the academic position to take, the not knowing but the pursuing. That would be the way to go about it, not the atheistic, which becomes, a kind of argument where it's just purely deductive. You're starting from a premise, and then that seems to sort of defeat the whole idea of intellectual curiosity.
Well, the area that you're touching on here, Ian, is this myth that in science that the scientist starts from the high ground of science, in that there is no philosophical baggage that goes along with that, that they are pure in thought and they are willing to go anywhere that the evidence goes in order to find truth. This is the myth. In reality, what we have are people who are driven by philosophical biases. And you can see evidence of this in the question that you asked before the last break about, well, what if there is, you know, what if somebody presented an idea that there is design in the universe, but that it comes from something else, not
like
from
an alien,
God, but
like an alien. Right.
Well, Nobel Prize winner Francis Crick advanced just that hypothesis. It's called directed panspermia, which means that aliens came from somewhere else and seeded life on Earth. And there are a large number of highly respected scientists who are fully entertain this idea. So it's perfectly acceptable to entertain the idea of design in the universe so long as it comes from an alien but not from God. This is highly revealing because it shows you that this debate really is not about the science. This debate is about worldviews. It's a worldview conflict where you have people who have a singular worldview, which is atheism, who are dominating the sciences to the exclusion of the other hypothesis, which is that there is design in the universe. This is where this battle is being waged. It really doesn't have to do with the science.
Well, I think that's an interesting idea. I'd like to know more about that. The scientists who can entertain alien intelligent design, just as long as it's not divine intelligent design. Is that part of the upcoming documentary?
Well, it's certainly included within the documentary in a couple of places. And as a matter of fact, there's a place toward the end of the film in which this comes up, in which when you watch the film, your jaw is going to hit the floor.
I bet.
Because you're going to be blown away by what these leading scientists have to say on this topic, and blown away by the weakness of their argument, and blown away by how the brilliant Ben Stein acts like the old Columbo character from the TV series. He puts this out in some very simple questions, and when you watch these top-notch scientists in the world today absolutely melt down because they're having to answer a very simple question, it is absolutely stunning.
Well, I look forward to that. You know, this is how it hits me, and again, we'll go to the phones a little bit early coming up next hour. We'll give you all the numbers that you can join probably at the bottom of next hour, because I want to talk about that a little bit. Some of the things that they said to you, and I'll ask you to give us some of the juicy quotes on that in just a minute. But it comes down to it. Having looked at the trailer, which you can link up through coasttocoastam.com, that this is nothing more than, I don't know, maybe this is an overstatement, but it seems like this is nothing more than not so much the intellectual superiority of people within a scientific, you know, setting, but rather sort of the hegemony of the cool kids, mm-hmm. right? That these are the cool kids.
Yep.
They control the playground. It's like, I know this sounds wrong, but it's almost like the nerd's revenge. You know, the same kids who used to get punched in the chest on the playground for being, you know, very scientific and
right.
not being
right.
particularly good athletic. Now they control the jungle gym,
yeah.
and they only allow the people on the jungle gym that agree with them.
That's
and
right.
that they're the top of the intellectual pyramid, and gosh darn it, they're going to keep it that way.
I think there's a lot of that going on.
Which isn't what science is supposed to be about.
No, absolutely
okay.
not.
All right, so then we'll suspend this conversation for just a minute. It's Mark Mathis. He's the producer of Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, a proponent, if not of intelligent design, of at least the belief that intelligent design should be discussed on its merits, whether they exist or not, at least discussed on its merits at a university level, and what happens when scientists attempt to do that. I mean, bona fide scientists. We'll find out more about the ones who have and what's happened to them and what's been said to them next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.